This is number 0032, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and this is indeed the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, number 0032. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File, we'll meet Bart King, the author of The Big Book of Gross Stuff. And gross is in the eye of the beholder.
The fact is that in certain cultures, something like, say, urine isn't gross. And scientifically, it's not. I mean, you know, if you look at urine under a microscope, there's not any action there. There's no bacteria, you know, doing backflips. It's an antiseptic substance. And yet, you know, if you compared that with a slide of saliva from your own mouth, I mean, you know, it's swarming with bacteria. Yet one, we just swallow, you know, without thinking about it. And it's probably good that we don't think about it. The other, we generally, you know, in Western cultures, we kind of, you know, well, be sure to wash your hands if you just peed and that kind of thing.
We'll also meet John Perkins, the creator of the websites IHateHim.com and IHateHer.com. Who are the people who post on these sites?
It's usually people either looking for reassurance about decisions they've already made. You know, was I right to leave him? And then, you know, they're looking for the group to reassure them that, you know, yeah, you go, girl, that was the right thing to do, that kind of thing. Or they're trying to get reinforcement for a decision that seems obvious to them, but they're not quite ready to make.
There's Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation.
You know, I really don't know how to say this, so, well, how should I put this? I really don't want to offend anybody, but, well, gee, I don't know what to say. Hi, this is Steve Walsh. You know, your guy in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. You're going to want to stick around for my two-minute tirade. It's coming up later on, right here, on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, including an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0032, is Fimo R. Mitchell, the author of Lost or Found, a coming-of-age story set in Montreal. He actually lives in China, where he's been there for almost 7 years, and he works as an English teacher. You can also check out his latest musings on his blog. You can find that at fimormitchell.wordpress.com. That's fimormitchell.wordpress.com. And thank you very much, Fimo, for doing the guest slate on this edition of The Stuff File. Fimo is a great writer and also a good friend. Check out his stuff. And let's get right to our stuff here on The Stuff File program. And speaking of China and Fimo, I have a story that comes from China. A growing drug problem facing Shanghai, China is stepped up use of methamphetamines, cocaine, and other drugs at all-night parties. But not the rave parties favored by young fast-lane types in the Western world. No, 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 no. These Shanghai druggies, according to a February dispatch in London's Guardian, are often middle-aged and retired people who use the drugs to give them strength for all-night games of mahjong played at out-of-the-way parlors around the city. Wow. Mahjong players hepped up on drugs. Must make for some interesting games. Moving right along, let's leave drugs behind and get to a couple of stories where alcohol is involved. Deanne Elschultz, age 44, was charged with domestic battery in Wesley Chapel, Florida in February after hitting her husband David in the face with a glass. David, who was intoxicated, had enraged Deanne by apparently completely missing the toilet bowl as he stood to urinate. Deanne then angrily charged after him, but lost her footing on the slippery floor. Ah, alcohol does have its wild and wacky ways, doesn't it? One more alcoholic-related story here. Police say they charged a Pennsylvania man with public drunkenness after he was seen trying to resuscitate a long-dead opossum along the highway. State Police Trooper Jamie Levier said several witnesses saw 55-year-old Donald Wolf of Brookville near the animal along Route 36 in Oliver Township, which is about 65 miles northeast of Pittsburgh. The trooper says one person saw Wolf kneeling before the animal and gesturing as though he were conducting a seance. He says another saw a wolf attempting to give mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to a dead opossum. Yee. Mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Levier said the animal had already been dead for quite a while. He might need some shots when he sobers up. Then again, alcohol is a sterilizer, so who knows? They could have balanced each other out. Moving right along, let's go to London for our next story. Defying grim predictions that the economic downturn would clobber specialist books, the annual contest for oddest title has had a bumper year, with the 2009 winner being named as Crocheting Adventures with Hyperbolic Planes. The book won 42% of the vote run by TheBookseller.com to emerge a comfortable winner. The top six books were as follows. As mentioned, number one, Crocheting Adventures with Hyperbolic Planes. Number two, What Kind of Bean is This Chihuahua? Number three, Collectible Spoons of the Third Reich. Number four, Afterthoughts of a Worm Hunter. Number five, Governing Lethal Behavior in Autonomous Robots. And number six, The Changing World of Inflammatory Bowel Disease. Horace Bent, the Bookseller magazine's diarist, said Crocheting was always the frontrunner. It defended its poll-topping position despite strong support from the spoon-carrying Third Reich, once again attempting to muscle in on someone else's territory. I believe Crocheting Adventures with Hyperbolic Planes is a worthy champion to stand alongside the likes of Greek Rural Postmen and their cancellation numbers, and Living with Crazy Buttocks as winners of this distinguished award. Philip Stone, the Bookseller's charts editor, said the magazine had received more than 4,500 votes, which has had a reflection on the oddest and therefore strongest shortlist in the 32-year history of the prize. So there you go. Remember that book? Check it out. Find it if you can. Crocheting Adventures with Hyperbolic Planes. And again, the website for that contest, TheBookseller.com. Check out the site as well. And moving right along, we managed to go a couple of weeks on this show without mentioning Tiger Woods' name. Well, that ends right now. A company called Pipe Dream Products is trying to capitalize on the recent Tiger Woods sex scandal by offering a series of sex toys which exploit the world's most famous golfer's personal problems. The toys include a take-home blow-up Tiger love doll, among other things, and are listed on the company's website as being, quote, available for a very limited time only, unquote. Of course, Tiger's lawyers are having none of it and have sent a letter demanding that the company stops selling the products, recalls all items that have been distributed, and destroys all stock. But this isn't the first attempt to do something like this. In February, Jocelyn James, one of Tiger's extramarital girlfriends, called on her lawyers to stop the sale of sets of mistress golf balls in which each ball featured the face of one of Tiger's alleged lovers. That's a lot of golf balls. Meanwhile, moving right along, it was a bad day to be the mayor or any member of the mayor's family in Seaside Heights, New Jersey. Police were originally trying to arrest Mayor Thomas E. Connor's 23-year-old son, Anthony, after he was escorted out of a bar by the club bouncers. Anthony tried to hit the bouncers, so police went to arrest him. But as he was being arrested, his 23-year-old sister, Lindsay, tried to interfere, striking a police officer on the arm and chest area. So they arrested her. But then the bar's staff also escorted Mayor Connors himself from the bar. And when he saw his daughter being arrested, he tried to interfere, so police arrested him. Mayor Connors was charged with disorderly conduct and interfering with an arrest. Anthony Connors was charged with disorderly conduct and resisting arrest. Lindsay Connor was charged with resisting arrest, interfering with an arrest, and simple assault. Exactly why the mayoral family was being asked to leave the bar in the first place is unknown. Wow. Exactly when is this clown up for re-election? That's what I want to know. And finally, in this section of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, we have something from the Darwin File, because as you know, the tree of life is often self-pruning. In Tampa, Florida, 55-year-old Evelyn Boyd had planned 21 days of fasting and prayer for religious reasons, and fasted herself to death. She had apparently been dead for several days when her family finally found her. Authorities say Boyd locked herself in a bedroom to pray and fast. She brought water and prayer requests and asked her husband not to disturb her. For some reason, it took the family 26 days to finally decide to force the door open and check on Mom, but by then it was way too late. Deputies don't plan to file charges, saying Boyd appeared to have fasted willingly. Her husband of 33 years, John Boyd, started a Bartow Pentecostal church back in 2003. He said his wife had fasted before, once for 40 days. But this time, no, it didn't work. You know what I think in this case? I think this is just a classic case of, this is God's way of saying, you want to talk to me directly? Why don't you come on up to the office? That's what I think this is. Anyway, there you go. Let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? You know, drinking pee isn't really all that gross. Just ask Bart King, author of The Big Book of Gross Stuff, published by Gibbs Smith, a book for curious kids and immature adults about everything disgusting from pee and poop to boogers to burps. Bart is on the line with us right now from Portland, Oregon. Hi, Bart. How are you?
Hello, Peter. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. What a great intro.
thanks for being
what
on the program.
What more needs to be said?
Well, it's an interesting topic for a book, and we should mention that on the old radio show. We had you on the show a couple of times. You had The Big Book of Girls, I believe.
The Big Book of Girl Stuff, which I co-wrote with my five sisters.
And I have four, so I know where you're coming from. And The Big Pocket Guide to Mischief.
Right, yeah, the Pocket Guide to Mischief was, I did that solo. I was actually qualified to write that one myself.
So I guess this one is just a natural extension.
Yeah, we're now capitalizing on the most gratuitous elements of my previous canon, I guess you could say. But I was a middle school teacher for 15 years, and so I think I still have in me this this belief that I can get reluctant readers hooked on books if I just write material that really caters to them. So that's kept me going.
Now, I'm almost afraid to ask what kind of research went into this book.
Right. Well, you can imagine. It was horrible. And yet, I have to say, and I'm a squeamish person, but it was fascinating, too. And, you know, aside from the traditional research, which I won't worry with, I do have but there is a substantial bibliography at the end of the book. Some of the interviews I did for the book were pretty interesting. And so one of the things your starting point with, you know, gross stuff is disgust. You know, what is disgust? Where does it come from? Are some of us more desensitized to it than others? And so kind of starting there, I thought, well, I'll just begin by interviewing some doctors, maybe some ER, some emergency room doctors, maybe some OBGYNs, people who, in my layperson's, you know, viewpoint, probably don't find things disgusting anymore. You know, I mean, they're exposed to such amazing and horrible things every day. So I went through a series of interviews, and they were really illuminating. You know, for example, I was speaking with an ER doctor, and I said, you know, well, you know, you see compound fractures, I'm assuming, on a daily basis, and that was the case. And I said, well, is there anything, little thing that gets to you still, or maybe a big thing? Is there, you know, what is it that kind of raises your hackles? And this person and every doctor that I interviewed had that idiosyncratic kind of gross thing that sticks them out. And in some cases, just kind of a garden variety thing, like a, you know, well, I don't know how graphic you want me to be, but just something as gross as like a green booger. But in this doctor's case, it was if a person has a sort of a generic material between their teeth, not a chive on their tooth, let's say, but just sort of like they were eating Wonder Bread or something. And so you're talking to this person, you can see the white substance, and you're just thinking, well, what is that? You know, were you just like, you know, eating a loaf or, you know, and I thought, well, in my mind, that's not that gross. But as this person was speaking, the doctor got goosebumps. I was like, this is really a visceral reaction to something. I thought, well, that's, you know, it's that kind of thing that makes it interesting, you know, that there are certain universals when it comes to gross stuff, and yet we all have our idiosyncrasies. So,
well, let me ask you this. In sure. Doing the research, have you discovered some things that the general population might think of as being gross that we shouldn't think is gross, and vice versa?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so the kind of the acid test of whether something is gross. And this doesn't, you know, not everything that's gross is like this, but basically any moist or gushy substance coming out of a bodily orifice is gross. And you can, you know, it doesn't seem to matter what time in history that you're at or what culture you're dealing with. That's almost that rules, you know, pretty ironclad or mucus clad, I guess maybe is a better term. That said, you know, the fact is that in certain cultures, you know, something like, say, urine isn't gross. And scientifically, it's not. I mean, you know, if you look at urine under a microscope, there's not any action there. There's no bacteria, you know, doing backflips. It's an antiseptic substance. And yet, you know, if you compared that with a slide of saliva from your own mouth, I mean, you know, it's swarming with bacteria. Yet one we just swallow, you know, without thinking about it, and it's probably good that we don't think about it. The other, we generally, you know, in Western cultures, we kind of, you know, well, be sure to wash your hands if you just peed and that kind of thing. But be that as it may, you know, in India, for example, urine is not thought of as particularly disgusting. In fact, urine therapy, you know, it's been used in India for centuries for a number of health reasons. It's considered to be, you know, urine as a topical substance and also as something, as a beverage, is thought to be good for the body and soul by millions upon millions of people there and has been. You know, Mahatma Gandhi, this was something I didn't know. Mahatma Gandhi drank a cup of his own urine each morning. Apparently didn't do him any harm. So, you know, and if urine isn't bad for you, and potentially one might think it's even good for you, you know, you have to think about getting it from the best source. So in India, actually, human urine is not the preferred source. That would be cow urine, because that is the most auspicious of beasts. And there apparently is, this sounds ludicrous, I realize as I'm saying it out loud, but there apparently are plans. So there's a nationalist group in India that's planning on selling a beverage, a soft drink, called Gao Jal, which translates to cow water, and it'll just be made of medicinal herbs and cow urine. And I believe they're going to carbonate it, so it'll be a carbonated cow urine beverage that one could buy in cans or liters.
I actually remember when that story came out, and I was pretty grossed out by it when I first read it.
So, but you know, I'm not going to, if one thinks about how it's harvested, for example, and I can only imagine how they're going to go about it. I mean, it does seem horrible, and I don't think I would, I mean, I might try some just out of curiosity if some were offered to me, but yeah, it's hard to imagine that being the beverage of choice. But by the same token, it is, you know, you can use the stuff as a disinfectant, and apparently consuming it for a purification ritual, not going to really do any damage.
Well, so, you know, I do not have a discerning palate, so I will not be trying that. Now, there are a lot of creatures out there that
right.
offer up, well, not necessarily voluntarily, but offer up their bodily fluids in the name of beauty.
Right.
Did you come across any of those? I mean, there are all kinds of things that are exotic creams.
Right.
That are made from parts of animals or things that come out of animals that I just would rather not have anything to do with.
Right, right. Yeah, I guess the most famous is, you know, using liquids from a whale for perfume, just so one can smell beautiful. But you're right, if there's any number of topical lotions that use, you know, in the search for a lanolin-like substance, yeah, it's kind of scary. And in fact, going back to urine, I guess, I mean, urine has been very common. The urea, which is where I guess the word urine gets its name, and it's also found in your sweat, has been thought of as being something, I think because of its antiseptic qualities, as something that's good for the skin. And so that's a real common thing that you can find, especially in south of the border from here in the States, in Mexico. It's very common to find urea or urine substitutes in topical lotions. So,
Now you were, as you say, a middle school teacher.
I was.
Who exactly is your market for this book? And is this something you want in schools?
Well, you know, there's what's interesting about the book is I had so much fun researching it, and I just went through a slew of scientific studies, and so what you end up with is a book that, although there is a gratuitous tilt, it's packed with what I call stealth science. So I feel that there's really nothing in the book that wouldn't be covered in a really exceptional and good junior high or middle school science class. So that said, yes, I do think it's utterly appropriate to have in a school. Of course, you know, if you tell kids that, then they're less likely to read it. So I usually focus on the more sensationalistic aspects. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun trying to cram as much culture, history, and science into it as possible.
Okay, so between the two of us,
right,
we have nine sisters. So having said that,
right,
is this the kind of book that makes girls go ooh? And little boys are attracted to it, or have you found that there's an audience for it regardless of gender?
Well, I think, you know, the demographic is, there's no question that when people hear about the book, the demographic they immediately think of is maybe that 8 to 12 or 9 to 14 age set, and they have boys in mind. That said, we could then fold in immature adults who will, by definition, be male, I guess. You know, they tend to, yeah. take most of the immature adult ratio. But, you know, when I was working on, since we mentioned it before, the Big Book of Girl Stuff, one thing that was of great interest to me was that my brain trust of five sisters and 55 former students that I'd had as a teacher, and they were all girls, they wondered why there wasn't something in the book that was a little bit like my earlier material, namely something kind of nominally gross or sort of off color. And I thought, well, I just assumed that you wouldn't want to read something like that. And there was a resounding Greek chorus of, you know, wrong. You know, we very much think that there's a way to approach these kinds of things. You know, and girls do have, just like as with humor, you know, women and girls do have perhaps a more sophisticated taste, but that's not to say that they don't enjoy the earthier portions of the human experience. So I would say, you know, that it would be entirely likely to find girls reading the book, perhaps not in the numbers of boys, but yeah, they tend to be quite open-minded, actually. They may have their, well, I'll leave it at that.
Okay. The book is called The Big Book of Gross Stuff. It's written by Bart King. You can check out his website, which is www.bartking.net. That's www.bartking.net. I thank you once again, Bart, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure, and I thank you so much for the invitation.
Bart King, author of The Big Book of Gross Stuff. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0032, and you'll find links to Bart's website plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca where you can order the book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. From Montreal, Canada, and spanning the globe like a butterfly on speed, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll meet John Perkins, the creator of the website IHateHim.com and also IHateHer.com. Plus, there is Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation, and, of course, an idiot of the day. And lots of stuff, which we have right here, right now. Let's get to it. In Dallas, Texas, 28-year-old Crystal Gardner took an interesting approach to trying to prevent the repo man from taking her Ford Expedition. Recovery agent Luke Ross was in the vehicle when he says Gardner threw her infant baby into the car through an open window. He said the baby landed on the seat like a kid bouncing on a bed. Texas law bans a vehicle from being repossessed if a person is inside. This tactic didn't sit too well with police, who arrested Gardner on charges including child endangerment related to abandonment, as well as having no driver's license and no insurance. The uninjured baby was placed with his father. Mr. Ross then repossessed the SUV. Mother of the year. That's what you get. Mother of the year. Let's see what's happening over in the UK in the nanny state. We go to Scotland for this one. A Scottish charity says it is holding classes on proper sleep habits for teenagers in a bid to boost the students' energy during the school day. Jane Ansell, director of the charity Sleep Scotland, says the classes are being offered at Glasgow schools and officials hope the trial run will help develop a program to be offered at schools across the country. Ansell said sleep deprivation has been linked to increased risks of depression and obesity. You wouldn't send somebody to school without the right amount of food, so why would you send them without enough sleep, she said. The charity said the teenagers are being taught to avoid TV late at night and keep to a strict schedule allowing for at least 9 hours of sleep per night. My question is, when did school stop teaching the things you need to learn in school? And when do they become parents? And if so, what are parents doing? Are they not teaching their kids how to sleep properly, or proper hygiene, or proper manners, or all the things that parents usually teach their kids? What is going on over in the UK? I have no idea. It's a nanny state. Let's just move along. Still with the UK, a policeman in Blackpool Lane, England, was suspicious when he saw a man accompanying a young woman into the restroom at a bus station. The officer followed them in and knocked on the cubicle door, the prosecutor told the judge. The defendant said he was helping his girlfriend. Mark Turner, who was 23, had his girlfriend hide his marijuana in her pants, and he wanted it back. She had just had her nails done and was apparently unable to unfasten her trousers herself without damaging her new nail polish. That's what Turner's attorney explained. So he accompanied her in to assist her. Turner was convicted of possession and sentenced to a time that he had served already while waiting trial. He was not accused of trying to deal pot. The cannabis was for his own use, his lawyer said. Seems his girlfriend was for his own use as well. Moving right along, we go to another story in England. A British man who raised money for charity by taking a roller coaster ride in the nude said it was his 298th thrill ride in the buff. Richard Jones, age 27, of Churchdown, England, a lifelong roller coaster fan, said his recent nude ride on the Nemesis coaster at England's Alton Towers marked the 298th time he had taken off his clothes and gone for a roller coaster ride for charity. Jones said his rides have included coasters across Europe and North America, including his favorite, the Top Thrill Dragster at Ohio's Cedar Point Amusement Park. "Ever since I was four, I have been hooked on roller coasters. It's an escape from time because it takes you somewhere you don't normally go," Jones said. "Hurtling along at 80 miles per hour also gets the adrenaline going. Doing it naked is a lot more difficult because it gets very cold." Jones said he participated in the merry 2004 Guinness World Record for largest naked roller coaster ride with 112 fellow nude riders on the Nemesis coaster. Now, I don't know if those were just male nude riders or if they involved female nude riders as well. But all I'm thinking is if there are a number of female nude riders on the roller coaster, hurtling at 80 miles an hour down steep hills, could you imagine the deafening whistle? Oof. Anyway, moving right along, back to the UK. Actually, not the UK, the United States for this one. Lowell, Massachusetts, we go for our next story. Police said a Massachusetts lumber truck crashed into a home after the driver was knocked unconscious by a small chili from Wendy's. Lowell police said Eric Grimm reported that he had choked on the chili when the truck hit a bump, causing him to pass out as the flatbed truck veered off the road and slammed into a house. The man, who was 59 years old, said emergency workers at the scene told him he had passed out, but he could not remember losing consciousness. Police said the truck hit the foundation of the home, and authorities were worried the home might collapse when the truck was pulled out. Grimm was taken by ambulance to a local hospital for treatment of minor injuries. Police said he could be cited for eating while driving. Wow. Chili from Wendy's, huh? You know, I'm trying to get commercials for this show, so I think there goes the Wendy's account. No chance of that now. Sheriff's deputies in Kissimmee, Florida, detained a U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent who was working undercover but who had aroused suspicions of residents in the neighborhood. After investigating, the deputies discovered that in order to guard his identity as an ICE agent or Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent, the man was posing as an FBI agent. Wow, there's a guy who seems to be unclear in the concept. You're an ICE agent, so the way you disguise who you are is by pretending you're an FBI agent? What would be the point in that? I don't know. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? You know, everybody hates somebody. Luckily, haters can vent their frustrations on IHateHim.com or IHateHer.com by posting their personal stories about people they just can't stand. On the line with us right now is John Perkins, who created the forums 10 years ago. He joins us from California. Hi, John. How are you?
Pretty good. You?
I'm fine. Thanks for being with us. So 10 years ago, you created these two sites, IHateHim.com and IHateHer.com. Did someone push you over the edge at this point and you figured, I have to do this, or what?
Every
everybody asks me that. Really, what it boils down to is I was bored one day and I was typing random stuff into a domain registrar, and IHateHim.com came up. Then a couple of months later, IHateHer.com came up, so I bought both of them, and it was more a matter of I had them. Well, now what do I do with them?
You know, a lot of people buy domain names. Why these two?
Well, I guess I'd want to be clear. I wasn't trying to squat on the domains. I wasn't trying to be a domain squatter.
Right.
It was more a matter of, oh, that's interesting, and now let's try to find something useful to do with it.
Okay.
You know, not just let it sit there and be nothing, but let's try to make something interesting out of it.
Okay, so 10 years ago you started this, and you got stories about people, I guess mostly concerned about their exes, but it's not always just exes, correct?
Not always. I would say the vast majority are relationship issues of one sort or another. Exes or parents or siblings, stuff like that.
And is there a commonality in the stuff you've seen over the decade that you've been doing this?
I want to say it's usually people either looking for reassurance about decisions they've already made. You know, was I right to leave him? And then, you know, they're looking for the group to reassure them that, you know, yeah, you go, girl, that was the right thing to do, that kind of thing. Or they're trying to get reinforcement for a decision that seems obvious to them, but they're not quite ready to make.
Now,
he's a jerk and I want to leave him, that kind of thing.
Okay. Now, as I mentioned, you have a lot of people who are dealing with some exes here, but I understand many gripe about the opposite sex on the corresponding site, though there are far more women, I understand, who diss other women than guys who diss other guys?
The odds are it tends to work out that way, yeah. The total number of story submissions on each site are roughly the same. Neither of them has really vastly outstripped the other, but if you compare how many of one gender is complaining about the same, boys complaining about boys versus girls complaining about girls. Yeah, I guess the numbers just work out. The girls seem to complain more about girls than guys do about guys.
Well,
I don't know why.
Going on the assumption, and let's rule out romantic entanglements between same sex. So let's just say it's a woman who doesn't like a friend of hers or a teacher of theirs or a sibling or a parent. And the same thing with a guy. Is it not just a possibility
right.
that guys, when they get upset or pissed off with somebody, they can walk away from them and just not deal with them again, but a woman needs to vent a little bit and find out why this person is this way or is not this way, depending upon what the issue is?
You mean why they submit the stories or why they feel that way about the other person to begin with?
Why they feel that way about the other person to begin with.
It seems like... Think about when you watch something on the Discovery Channel, you know, one of those nature shows, the lion, the pride of lions, that kind of thing, right?
Right.
When the female lions, whatever they squabble about, at the end of the day, they're still in the same group. When the male lions squabble, you know, yeah, maybe there's one alpha male, but then the others just sort of get kicked out of the group to run off and be by themselves.
Right.
I want to say it may be that males are used to, you know, if they don't win, if they don't get the girl or get whatever the victory is, they're used to going off and having to be by themselves, maybe a social isolation or maybe in some other way. But women, they seem, and again, I'm not trying to be sexist or anything like that, but it sort of seems like even after they're in a situation or a group with somebody they don't like, they seem a little more often to intentionally still subject themselves to that group. I hate that girl, but she's still part of my group.
Okay. So in the 10 years that you've done this, have you had... Because
yeah.
I've gone through the site and I've read a little bit of both of them. It seems very interesting.
Sure.
Have you received any complaints from people who don't like the idea of the site?
If you mean like parents or, say, law enforcement or anything like that, no. Basically, I've made very, very sure to strip the stories of any personally identifiable information. You can list your first name, maybe the state you live in, but not first and last and hometown or anything like that. Because a lot of the submitters are apparently under 18, so I want to make sure their information is protected. I may have had one person at some point ask for their story to be removed, but there's a disclaimer that, you know, everybody's supposed to read before they submit a story, and once you hit the go button, it's it's gone.
I'm looking more in terms, for instance, I'm wondering, for instance, have you heard from any psychologists who might say that this is a good idea, that it gives people an opportunity to vent in a positive way by writing things down, as opposed to some people who don't think it's a good idea?
Not from any psychologists, but I get a lot of feedback from people that are just, thank you, thank you, thank you. This is such, I feel so much better. I've had a chance to vent. You know, I couldn't say all this stuff to my family, or I couldn't say it to my friends without getting into a whole other mess. So they appreciate having a community to speak to. Rarely I will get the occasional story or comment where somebody says, oh, this site is stupid. It's encouraging hate or encouraging anger or that kind of thing. But I don't think it is, because it's allowing people to deal with anger they already have. It's not saying you should be more angry. Not like that.
Do you edit what people say on the site? Because I would assume that sometimes when people get angry, they can sometimes vent to an extreme of saying, oh, I wish somebody were dead, or wishing personal violence on someone. Do you edit that kind of stuff out?
There are a very few situations in which I'll edit. Basically, if somebody's saying something like, you know, that guy really needs to get his ass kicked, something like that, usually that sort of thing will appear as a little blurb at the end of the story. I can just chop that blurb out and the rest of the story is good. But if it's a whole long thing, if they're actually saying they intend to commit a crime, then I have to chat pretty much with the local sheriff. That hardly ever happens. What I occasionally get is somebody will say, you know, my relative or my boyfriend or somebody touches me inappropriately, stuff like that, or beats me. That happens more often than somebody saying, you know, I'm actually going to do something.
And in that case, when somebody claims this has happened to them, what do you do?
Well, I typically experience a sheriff's deputy looking at me like I'm from Mars. It happens about twice a year. And I've got a form letter on the computer at home. It's happened enough. I know what questions the sheriff will ask me. I write all this stuff out, and I go talk to them. They look at me funny. They look at the letter, look at me, look at the letter, and then they say, oh, okay, well, thank you. I mean, I tell them, you know, where the email was submitted from. I give them the original email with the header information. And if it's one of the major providers, I've got the major email providers, the major hosting providers, they have law enforcement-specific phone numbers for the police to call. But I never find out what happens after that, because the police never have any reason to tell me. It's just, you know, oh, well, thank you, we'll take it from here, and that's it. At least I can sleep at night knowing that, you know, I haven't been lazy and thus caused some kid to have another night of unpleasantness.
Right. On a lighter note, I understand that some people have not only hated people that they personally know, but they also don't like something that, or someone they don't know in the public eye, maybe even a public figure,
right,
or a character. I understand you received some person who actually confessed his hatred for the Snuggle Bear from the fabric softener ads.
Yeah. I have no idea. I mean, I remember that character, and it's never bothered. I mean, it's a cute little, okay, it's an animated teddy bear, big deal. I don't know if it was somebody just being weird or if they actually had a personal dislike for it, but whatever you have a gripe with, I'm pretty much happy to publish a story about, as long as it doesn't have, you know, the certain particular bits of content that have to get filtered out. Hmm.
Well, the website, and there are two of them, it's www.ihatehim.com and www.ihateher.com, and people just go there and they can submit their gripe, I guess it were. They can just follow the instructions you've laid out on the two sites?
Yes, they can.
Excellent.
Any age, any gender, whatever they've got to say.
Excellent. That's ihatehim.com and ihateher.com, two websites put up, two forums put up by John Perkins in California. And John, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you for having me.
John Perkins, the man behind the websites ihatehim.com and ihateher.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is 0032, and you can find links to John's site.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook.
There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
If you're into the paranormal, then you're into Don Ecker and Dark Matters.
Something I have been immersed in for 20 years. Lunar research on items known as lunar transient phenomena. For over 400 years, world-class astronomers have been observing strange sights, lights, flashes, and other things on the moon.
Provocative topics, listeners' calls, and interesting guests.
My guest, Mr. Alan Stern.
On my website, I have a list of 100 or so lunar conspiracy theories. I had to kind of come to terms with one of them that I hadn't really thought about.
It's the kind of show that might keep you up at night.
Speculation is, at some time in our past, or perhaps even today, there is another presence on the moon. And I'm not talking about indigenous lunar folks. I'm talking about a space base by somebody else on the far side of the moon.
Dark Matters with Don Ecker, exclusively on CyberStationUSA.com.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, Peter Anthony Holder once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters, and in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh.
How you doing, Steve Areno?
Oh, gosh, I think I'm going to survive.
Was there a time when that was in doubt?
Yeah, I think every day of my friggin' life. But that's okay. It's okay. Things are working out well, and I feel pretty gosh darn gully Whitaker's gee good, and I'm going to be a survivor because gosh darn it, gully Whitaker's, that's the kind of guy I am.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So there you are.
Okay.
There you are.
So let's get right to the meat of the program,
okay,
as it were. And,
okay,
and
let's do that.
You can share with us the interesting stories from your neck of the woods.
Okay, let us begin, shall we?
Absolutely.
Okay. Dateline, Jefferson City, Missouri.
That's exactly where you live, as a matter of fact. The Show Me State.
It
in
is.
The city
I live in
you
the
live.
Show Me State, that's right. Yeah. And I've lived here for 10 years now.
Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it? Gosh. Well, I've got to tell you something. I cover the legislature, as you know, and things got a bit ugly recently in the state capitol at the Missouri House of Representatives. Well, they finished up their version of the state budget. The budget writing process is rarely serene. Both sides accuse opponents of playing political games. That's par for the course, all right? This time, the cuts were deeper, though, and the temper is a little shorter because there's no money, let's face it. The debate finally boiled over when Democratic whip Jeff Rorta accused the Republicans of using the budget to go after the governor, who happens to be a Democrat. Republican Tim Jones exploded, okay, figuratively, not literally, accusing Rorta of taking a walk on Wednesday, not voting on important issues. You know, on the budget. And he said, on every single bill, you took a walk. Then he said, you know, we had all kinds of accusations going back and forth, people yelling at each other, calling each other a liar, liar, pants on fire. It was terrible. Anyway, Jones and Rorta started shouting and moving toward one another before they were kept apart by their colleagues. I was hoping it would come to blows, Peter, but it didn't. Rorta later apologized for his tirade, but reminded colleagues he was only away from the Capitol to attend the funeral of a close friend, and that's why he missed the votes.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. See?
Mm-hmm.
But it almost came to blows.
Yeah.
I like nastiness. Nastiness is so much more fun to report on than serenity, isn't it?
Now, were you in the room when this took place?
No, actually, I was at the other end of the Capitol, but I heard what was going on, and I ran over.
Of course.
Of course. Could you blame me?
No, not at all.
Of course not. It's the kind of person I am.
Yes.
I want to see what's going on. When there's nastiness to be seen, I want to be watching.
I hear you.
Okay, just wanted to let you know. Let's move to another state, shall we?
Yes.
Okay, Dateline, Harrodsburg, Kentucky.
That'd be the bluegrass state.
Sure is. A 32-year-old Kentucky woman who, sounds like a song, doesn't it? Yeah. Anyway, a 32-year-old Kentucky woman who said she didn't know that she was pregnant delivered her newborn son on the floor of her laundry room by herself and even cut the umbilical cord. K Kelly Bottom, interesting name for someone in this position, but anyway, Kelly Bottom says she also picked up her other son from school and stopped in at the baby's grandmother's house to show off the infant before going to the hospital. She picked up a pack of cigarettes at the convenience store as well. No, I made that part up. But anyway, the mother and the baby were discharged from the hospital after checking in just a couple of days earlier. Brian Keith Sims weighed 6 pounds, 15 ounces at birth.
What I'd like to know is that conversation when she goes over to her mother's house and says, "Mom, let me show you the baby." What baby?
That would be interesting, yeah. How many grandchildren do you have? Nope, wrong. Yes. Dateline, Owensboro, Kentucky.
Still the bluegrass state.
It is, yeah. Still a state I've never lived in, you know.
Not yet.
No. Police in Kentucky said a woman arrested for public intoxication faces an additional charge for squirting breast milk on a deputy at the jail. Davies County Sheriff's deputies said Tony Crammell, she's 31, of Owensboro, was arrested on a misdemeanor count of public intoxication, and while changing into a jail uniform, she allegedly sprayed a stream of breast milk into the face of a female deputy.
Now, let me see if you got this straight. I'm assuming when you say squirting breast milk, we're talking from the original container.
Yes, we're talking about from the original container, nature's own.
Gotcha.
Yeah. The sheriff's office said the deputy went through a biohazard decontamination process, and Trammell was booked on an additional charge of third-degree assault on a police officer, which, by the way, is a felony.
Hmm. What do they anticipate would be in her breast milk that would require a biohazard decontamination process?
I don't know, but there are some negatives and some positives, and apparently she was wrong to think that this kind of thing would bring out the breast in people.
That was
bad, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, if we had some laughter, would that be canned laughter?
Got milk?
Look at that smile. Shall we move on?
Let's.
Okay, put the cup down. Here we go. Dateline, Papillion, Nebraska.
Where?
Papillion, Nebraska. It's like Papillon, except they throw in an extra I.
Oh, okay.
No butterfly in that state, I'll tell you.
Okay. That'd be the Cornhusker state, by the way.
Yes, it would. It would. Yes, I know. Because the whole country has to pay for its Medicaid increases. Okay. Authorities, because a senator was bought, authorities said a 30-year-old man showed up so drunk for his sentencing for drunken driving that he missed his hearing and now faces even more time behind bars. Authorities said Jason Botos was driven to the Papillion courthouse by his father, who needed help from deputies to get his son out of the vehicle. Now, that's drunk, okay? Prosecutor Ben Perlman said Botos was so drunk.
How drunk was he?
Yeah, there we go. He was so drunk he couldn't attend the hearing, so the judge issued a warrant, which is what judges are supposed to do, I guess, when you're so drunk you can't attend your own hearing. Deputies arrested Botos where? In the parking lot. He had pleaded guilty to misdemeanor drunken driving in a September 2009 collision with 5 other vehicles. This guy is somebody who should be locked up, okay?
Absolutely.
No question. All right, where do we go from here? I got it. Dateline, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
That'd be the Badger State.
Or as we like to call it,
the Cheese State.
Where the motto is,
if it's cheddar,
it's better. An unidentified 21-year-old man told police in Milwaukee that he was just trying to be funny when he snuck up behind his mother as she returned from the store at 9 p.m. He said he pretended to rob her, but the also unidentified 37-year-old woman pulled a .357 Magnum revolver and fired several shots, hitting the guy at least twice and wounding him in the groin.
Mm.
Ooh.
I guess she doesn't want to be a grandmother.
Apparently not. Oh, boy. Given the choice between that and getting squirted with the milk, I mean, man. Anyway, he was hospitalized in serious condition. Police are investigating the man, thinking that he was probably really trying to rob his mother. He has prior drug and weapons arrests, by the way. His mother, meanwhile, was arrested on weapons charges this time. How about that? You know, I think it's important that families share some of the characteristics of nastiness. I think it's a good thing in a way.
Yes.
But, you know, as an observer, I look at that and I think, what is wrong with our society? And, you know, Peter, that kind of thing just angers me.
I understand.
And, you know what I do when I get angry?
Oh, I know very well.
Yeah, some people, they cuss and they throw things. I grab, you know, keyboard in hand, and I write a two-minute tirade, which is what I've done now, and I'd like to share it with you, if I may.
Tirade away.
You know, based on our opening story about the discord in the Missouri House of Representatives, Peter, I'd like to open up on those who preface nasty comments with the obligatory BS line that goes like this. I'm not trying to offend, but... You know, it's at this point that the person launches into a tirade in which he or she does nothing but offend the person being addressed. A close cousin of this offensive remark is the ever popular, please don't take this personally, but, well, based on that lead-in, how can anything that follows be taken as anything other than personal? Then, of course, there's the always wonderful, I don't mean any disrespect, but... Of course you mean to disrespect. Not that the person to whom you're talking doesn't deserve to be disrespected at times, but just say it without the preface, okay? You know, Peter, how should I put this? Here goes. I hate to say this, but, well, no, that's not it. Let's try. I don't want to sound judgmental, but... No, wait, that's not it either. How about no offense intended, but... No, that's not it either. Well, why don't I just say I don't like people who sugarcoat their opinions? And if they don't like me being so brazen and outspoken and saying that, too bad. That's the way I'm gonna be.
Well, there you go. And you know, I was taught a long time ago that anything before a but is a lie.
It's true, and I always heard that, unless, of course, it's a big but. But, you know, seriously, I got to tell you, Peter, a but or a however destroys everything that precedes it in a sentence.
Absolutely. And on that note, sir, on that note,
yes.
Say those three magic words.
Hit the theme!
This is The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of The Stuff File program. We have enough time for an idiot of the day. And actually, a special treat for you. I've got a cavalcade of clowns here. We've got a twofer. We've got a couple of stories for you that share idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
We start off with the danger of phoning home from prison. Franco Marinic isn't exactly the smartest drug trafficker in America. He was busted on drug trafficking charges and phoned his mom from the county jail in Florida. Now, most inmates already know that all calls from jail are monitored, and even if you don't know that, there's a recording at the beginning of every call that tells you so. But that didn't stop the 300-pound convict who sports tattoos of guns and white boy on his tummy from telling way too much to mom. The mother asked him if he had left anything at Spank's house. Franco then told her he left 2 ounces of powder in the cushion on a couch. And, of course, powder is fat white boy slang for cocaine. So deputies went straight to the home of Christopher Spank Eaton and Alexandria Dykes, who welcomed deputies to try their luck. They didn't find any drugs in the couch, but they did find 4 ecstasy pills next to the living room TV. Then they saw Ms. Dykes removing 2 bags of cocaine from a shoe. Spanks then spontaneously stated to the officers, "Hey, look, man, I am sorry we lied to you. Franco has never done anything for me, so I figured I would just go to Polk County and try and sell this stuff to make some money." So Spanks and Dykes were both arrested. They're all idiots. But we're not done. Got another one here for you. Another classic. This one from further north in the United States. Police in Fairfield, Connecticut had plenty of time to prepare for an upcoming bank robbery. That's because the suspects were stupid enough to call the bank ahead of time and tell an employee to get a bag of money ready to go. So the bank called police, and about 10 minutes later, 27-year-old Albert Bailey and an unidentified 16-year-old boy showed up to pick up the loot. The police picked them up instead in the bank's parking lot. Sergeant James Perez said the suspects were, quote, not too bright. Oh, come on, James, you're being too kind. These two guys and the three in the previous story are idiots.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, number 0032. Hope you've enjoyed it. Tell all your friends, okay? The website is thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests on the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding number for this program, which is 0032. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. Love to hear from you. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PA Holder and Twitter at twitter.com/PA Holder. We hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including cyberstationusa.com and World FM 88.5 FM in New Zealand. Bye-bye.
Experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.